You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, it's a Thursday, hour one, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Could we limit the number of three-point attempts in an NBA game? Too much of a good thing. Chris Mannix will join us on loan from Sports Illustrated coming up. I'm looking at the numbers. The NBA is on pace to make 27,731 three-pointers this season. That would be just 224 shy of the record, which was set in 2018. Keep in mind, we're going to have 10 games less for each team this season. Teams averaging almost 13 made three-pointers per game. The league is on pace to break that record for a ninth consecutive season. Also averaging 35 attempts from three-point range per game. That'll be a record for the 10th consecutive season. But I'll talk to Mannix about it. Saw an article on ESPN that said, hey, maybe you limit the number of three-point attempts or made. Let's say you have 20 that you can do each half. And then after that, a three-point shot counts as 2 points. I think if you brought a little bit more physicality to the NBA where you could hand-check somebody, that might help out a little bit. Right now, it's basically free-flowing where you can just stand on the perimeter and everybody can take a shot. Ball movement, pretty good on the perimeter. Kids love it as well. I mean, you're able to imitate your best player, your favorite player. I mean, imagine that. You get on the court, you want to be Steph Curry. How often do you get to do that? But I don't know if people are bothered by it. Maybe it's just a purist that there's too much of a good thing here. This is what basketball is. It's about dunking. It's about layups, and it's about three-point attempts. Okay. So we're going to take away something that the players have improved upon, because for a while there were a lot of players who weren't great shooters. They made themselves great shooters. I think what the NBA may look at is, are we creating great basketball players? Are they one-dimensional? Just stand on the perimeter and you can stay in the league for an extra 5 years because you can shoot. Or we've seen marquee players like Jason Kidd or Vince Carter, they become three-point specialists. I'm okay with it. I don't want to add gimmicks. Hey, how many three-pointers have we attempted? 19. So you get one more this half. Or in the final 6 minutes, it's been proposed. Now, this is just, you know, I think power brokers behind the scenes talking about this. In the final 6 minutes, then the limitations are off. You can shoot as many threes as you want to. I don't need gimmicks. This is basketball. You said this is what you need to do, and players have improved their games. Now I go, oh, wait a minute. You guys got too good. Got too good here. Yeah, Paul.
You sound like a guy who doesn't need a gimmick, but you'd kind of like something to cool off the threes.
I would like, okay, first of all, have you watched games now where nobody's called for palming? Like, you can get your shot. There's no traveling, and I can't put my hand on you. These guys are so elite in what they do, and I can't slow them down. This is when you go back and you watch a game that Jordan played in, or Bird, or Magic, I can be physical with you. I could put my hand on you. Now, it was still entertaining. I don't know how it's so hard to play defense now, because I can't put my hand on you at all. And there's nobody calls a carry anymore. John Stockton and Allen Iverson used to have a little bit more of a handle. And then all of a sudden, I was watching a game last night, college. I'm going, nobody's calling this North Carolina, Notre Dame. And you could see how it's such an advantage. I can take that ball and I can have you off balance in a second. And you can't put your hand on anybody. There's the physicality of just being able to man up is gone from the NBA. But, you know, maybe it is too much of a good thing. But I don't think we're going to be doing anything anytime soon. I don't want a gimmick in there where we're counting the number of threes. Yes, McLovin.
Also, the fouls on James Harden and Doncic are unwatchable. Like, why do they call those little things where Harden just throws his body into you?
Yeah, and Trae Young has mastered this where he's running down the floor and then he'll shoot and back up into you. And Steve Kerr said, you know, you can't do that. You can't allow that. Reggie Miller, I think, invented that, by the way. Yeah, McLevin.
But the NCAA tournament is going to be decided by one play and one play only, landing in the three-point. That was the only thing that... That's why UVA won a title. They won like four games off that one call.
Yeah.
I hate that rule.
Yeah.
Did they do that when you were a jump shooter back in the day? You did get any space, did you?
No, they would put their foot underneath you. That they wanted you, when you would go up, they'd put their foot underneath. So you were thinking about coming down and avoiding their foot, believe it or not. But, you know, I'll talk to Mannix about this. I don't know if there's anything that can be done, should be done, but... You know, you're seeing the proliferation of the three-point shot, college, in high school, even grade school as well. 877-3DP show, email address dp at danpatrick.com, Twitter handle at DP show. I did find this story amusing this morning because it feels like the Boston Celtics are in on every possible free agent, all the big names, Danny Ainge. Oh, we just missed out on Chris Paul, Kevin Love, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, Paul George. But then a story comes out that they just missed on James Harden here. Feels like Danny Ainge wants everybody to know that Danny Ainge is doing his job as a GM. We're trying. We almost got him. Like, they almost get these great players. You know who they've gotten? Exactly. None of these players. Hey, we got Kemba Walker. Okay. That's it. Chris Paul, Kevin Love, Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, Paul. We almost got them. Hey, were you guys in on the James Harden suite? Yeah, we almost got him. Almost got him. Yeah, we almost got Wilt Chamberlain. Yeah, we almost got Kareem. Yeah, wait, Danny, you weren't there then. You almost got Tim Duncan.
Oh, don't bring that
up. You won the lottery.
That still bothers people.
Oh, I'm fired up today. This program brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. They go far beyond. From their customization options, cutting-edge tech, five-star sales service, financial support crew, Mercedes-Benz Vans. Built, equipped, and engineered to get ready for anything. So go the extra mile, taking the all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. And don't get me wrong. I love watching the three. I think it's exciting. I think it's more exciting than the dunk. And the strategies that go into this, I think, are really important. But I will say this. James Harden is getting credit for changing his game. James Harden is getting a lot of credit for an MVP candidate. Why? He changed his game. And you know why? Because he had to. Because if you look back on his game in Houston, it didn't succeed. He needed to change. Now, is there a middle ground here? Because I'm looking at the Lakers. Lakers aren't a great shooting three-pointing team, a great three-point shooting team. They don't shoot volume. The 76ers, I think, are bottom of the list there. Utah Jazz are first in shooting threes. What is sustainable? Because there is sustainability in the regular season, and that doesn't always translate into the postseason. Postseason comes down to half-court basketball, in my opinion. Always has. Always will. We're playing the same opponent. There's no tricks. It's not, hey, we got to deal with this guy one night, now we move on to another guy. It's every night. We're going to be facing you, and here's our game plan. And then you see what teams are really all about. That philosophy, that game plan, does it work? And it's going to be the same this year. Utah Jazz, they fire threes, okay? Is it sustainable in May or June? That's what I want to know. The Nets have mid-range jumpers. I got Joe Harris and James Harden, but... Kyrie, KD, mid-range jumpers here. Is that sustainable? Do you have to play great defense this year? Right? You got to play great defense always. I always think you have to. Maybe the Nets, they break that mold this year. You don't have to play great defense. Just play, or at least give the impression you're playing some defense here. All I got to do is outscore you. It's rare. But that's what the philosophy is right now. But I just saw the article and I started thinking about the three-pointer. And I don't mind watching good three-point shooters. It's when you watch bad three-point shooters. That's when it drives me crazy. Yes, McLovin.
Is that why the Warriors had to add Durant for like the slower pace of the playoffs, like a mid-range guy?
Well, I mean, he's one of the great scorers of all time. Durant can shoot three and get to the hoop. I mean, he's a walking basket.
But that three-point style worked for them for a while, just nothing but threes. But then it didn't really – I don't know if that could have won them three titles.
Yeah, I mean, if Durant doesn't get hurt, I mean, you can go down, you know, look back on that, hit the way-back machine. And
because all they did was hoist threes, and it worked for them – to a large extent.
But I have three of the greatest shooters in NBA history. So it's not like it's a plucky team like the Utah Jazz and you go, look at them, they won the title. I got Steph, Clay, and Kevin Durant. Those are three of the greatest shooters in the history of the game. And I could put Clay and Steph up there as just shooters. Durant's one of the great scorers in the history of the game. That's a pretty good advantage against any team there. Yeah, Paulie.
I don't know if this has been asked. Someone's had to ask this. Would you rather have in their prime to start your super team, Steph, Clay, and Durant, Harden, Kyrie, and Durant? Is that an easy one or a hard one? Assume everyone's in their prime. So the Golden State Warriors two, three years ago, Durant, Steph Curry, Clay Thompson, or the current Nets three? And I assume everybody's healthy.
Yeah, I just don't know about Kyrie. I'm not...
On or off the court?
Well, just Kyrie.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure. It feels like Clay and Steph, there's no drama whatsoever. There was drama with Draymond and Durant because Draymond knew that KD was just stopping through to pick up a title and then he was leaving. And I think Draymond had a real problem with that. But when they were all on the same page, that was beautiful. That was beautiful basketball to watch. I would take those three because it feels like I have two of the greatest deep shooters of all time, and I have one of the top five scorers of all time. Add that, you know, put that together. If one guy's off, two guys, you know, what are the odds that two guys would be off and one guy would be on, or you had two guys who were on and one guy was off? And you got a coach who was a shooter, Steve Kerr. That's all he did was shoot. But I would take that group. Harden, we've seen in the playoffs, it's not good. He doesn't come up big in the playoffs. Yes, McLovin.
Permission to completely annoy you with a system take?
No.
It's too late now. You opened the door. Yeah, you called on me. Yeah. It was your bad.
Do you really want to do that to me?
Paulie says I shouldn't do it.
Go ahead.
Are Steph and Clay if they didn't play in that Warriors system? And my proof being, Steph was not Steph with Mark Jackson as a coach. So I don't know if you can judge them independently of each other in a way.
Well, Steph had the ankle injury first couple of years.
True.
Right? Clay grew up right before our very eyes as a great shooter. If I put Clay... In today's NBA, Klay Thompson could be even better if he was out of Golden State. From the standpoint of he wouldn't share the bat, he would be averaging, you know, 28 points a game.
But what if the Timberwolves had listened to you and taken Steph instead of Johnny Flynn or whatever it was? There's a chance Steph might not have developed the same way.
That is fair, but do I think he would still be great, an All-Star? Yes, I do. I mean, a lot of down through history, look at the players, you know, let's say Bill Russell didn't end up in Boston. If Bill Russell ended up with the Cincinnati Royals, he's not Bill Russell.
Or is he? That's my question. You saw him play. Like, was he that dominant?
But he's known as a winner. That he was not, he had eight Hall of Famers in the lineup. If the Bears drafted Tom Brady, like you have a perfect situation for greatness. Down through history, I mean, look at it. Kurt Warner doesn't get the chance to play. When Trent Green goes down, he gets the chance to play. And then we saw that there was something. What if Trent Green doesn't get hurt? What if Drew Bledsoe does not get hit? Like, all of these what ifs and careers that hinged upon that. What if Belichick stays with the Jets? What if Belichick and Saban stay with the Browns? Like, it's just crazy that, you know, when you start to think about it, there is a lot of luck that goes into these great careers, whether it's coaching. What if Nick Saban stayed with the Dolphins? What if Alabama wasn't open? Like, it's littered with all of this. It's crazy. Yeah, McLovin.
I guess my point is that Harden, Kyrie, and Kevin Durant might be more individually talented, but when the three of those guys were humming in Golden State, it was like a greater triumvirate. If it was. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But imagine, like, the Lakers won the coin toss with Magic Johnson.
What are we talking about? If the Celtics had gotten Tim Duncan?
Magic was going to go to the Bulls. So it's a coin toss. Like, that's how crazy all of this is. But then once you got him, what you did with him, then you got Showtime.
What if Portland had taken Jordan? Would that have...
That's why it's just history is littered with that. That's why when you always say, well, it's system quarterback, there's a lot that goes into that. And Peyton Manning could have gone to the Chargers if the Colts took Ryan Leaf.
Right, and Ryan Leaf... No, I don't know. Like, no, Peyton still would have been successful, probably.
He would have been successful.
But they always say that Chargers organization was a mess.
Yes, it was. But the NBA starts its second half in earnest tonight. I don't know what that means, McLovin. In earnest.
I always hear that. No.
How about the NBA just starts its second half tonight? Yes, Tom.
And is it insulting to, like, those couple of games that were played last night? I know in earnest means the majority of the schedule, but if I'm the Grizzlies or Spurs or something like that, hey, we're important too. We just happen to be one of two games from last night.
In earnest. Where is Ernest, by the way?
Oh, you mean that guy Ernest Goes to Camp?
No, is there a town called Ernest? Remember when they changed Montana, Joe Montana, that city, they named it Joe Montana? Is there an Ernest?
By the way, I heard yesterday some NFL free agent was tendered again, and I laughed.
Like, what other sport do we use the word tender? He was tendered. I mean, it sounds so nice. By the way, I got to play some of Jerry Jones's comments from the press conference yesterday. Oh, it was priceless. Yes, Paulie.
There was an Ernest, Pennsylvania, and an Ernest, Georgia. Oh. That's the only ones in America.
Imagine if Elway had gone to the Colts. Or Elway had gone play for the Yankees, right? History is, you know, rewritten it with all of these moments.
That'd be a good, like, podcast, like, imagining all those different scenarios.
I brought that up before. I wanted somebody to do the heavy lifting so I could just take the cliff notes of what they came up with. But what if? Like, you just did a what if podcast or column.
Kind of like a Sliding Doors. You ever seen that movie? The rom-com with Gwyneth Paltrow. Did I just lose our man card for the day? Sliding Doors, like, if she went this way, her life went this way. If she went that way, her life went that way. It's a great rom-com.
Well, I did wonder that. You know, when you take a job or you help somebody get a job. I have broadcasting students. And you help them get a job someplace. And then they might meet somebody in that job that turns out to be their wife or their husband. Like, what school you go to? And you meet somebody there, and because you went there, or you took a job and you didn't think you were going to get that job, or you missed out on a job. Like, just, it's weird. I believe in fate, but there's a lot of luck that goes into this. Yes, Pauline.
I was bartending in New York, spinning my wheels, doing nothing in the mid-90s, and I worked late because some other guy wanted to leave early bartending, and I met a dude who worked at 3 in the morning for CBS Sports. And we started talking, and he goes, yeah, we have an opening for, like, a researcher on the NFL Today shows. Like, oh, I would love to be part of that. And they ended up bringing me in. I always think to myself, if I didn't work late that night, do I meet that dude? Do I get a job at CBS Sports?
Yeah. It's wild. If I didn't miss out on the job in Dayton, Ohio, and then want to feel sorry for myself, and I went to see an ex-girlfriend in Atlanta, and the last day I'm there, I took a tape into CNN and then got hired that day at CNN. If she says, hey, just they're hiring at CNN, I go to Atlanta last day and I have my audition tape and I'm going, I can't get a job at CNN. And I went in, got a job. A week later, I'm doing headline sports at CNN. Yes, McLovin.
Do you remember there was another guy who was going to do what I did for SI right before we were starting? Mark Bechtel, I'll say the name.
Yes.
But he got some book project with the Daytona 500. They're like, all right, well, Perloff, you're up. Otherwise, this whole thing for me never would have happened. It was just like a stroke of luck.
Damn it, I got to blame Bechtel.
Sorry about that.
Yes, Paul.
I can remember the day we met McLovin at Sports Illustrated. We were there, and McLovin, you were goofy. You were kind of like jittery and talking really fast, and your arms are flailing in the air when you're talking. And Dan didn't remember your name when you walked out of the room. He goes, that one guy, he's got something. And that was the entire discussion. And then it kind of morphed into something.
That's not what happened.
That is partially what happened.
I was suave and cool.
No,
you
were not. You were not. You were wacky.
Get out of here.
You were.
You don't remember that day. Paulie's set making this up.
I'm not making it up. I can remember it specifically. It was the same day because while we're waiting for you to be in the room, Rick Riley called in to quit Sports Illustrated, and we were in the room of the head of Sports Illustrated.
Right.
While Rick Riley's calling in to quit, Dan and I are sitting there in the room listening to the phone call.
That is true. They put Rick Riley's call on speaker, and I'm listening to Rick Riley saying he's quitting Sports Illustrated to go to the mothership. And then I met you right after that.
Talk about sliding doors, by the way. Rick Riley goes to ESPN, and you go to Sports Illustrated, and look, everything happened there.
It wasn't exactly a trade. Because ESPN didn't do well on that trade. But it was presented that way. Oh, Riley for Patrick. And I went, nah, that ain't true.
That was like Joe Barry Carroll for Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish.
No, wow. But I did help Riley with that trend. You know, he wanted to know about ESPN, and I did help him with that. And that's, I did warn him. You know, I said, know what you're going into. And, you know, Riles wanted to be a TV guy, and he was tired of writing column Sports Illustrated. Wow. How did we get here? We got a little deep there. All right, we'll take a break. Chris Mannix will join us. We'll talk about too much of a good thing with the three-point proliferation, as they like to say. A few other things with Mannix coming up. Doug Gottlieb will stop by. If Duke, it looks like they're on the doorstep. If Duke beats Florida State next game, Duke's in the tournament, I think. And Mark Few, the Gonzaga head coach, will join us a little bit later on. Just getting started, running late here. Back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Discover the Discover card. And then thank me later. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically. There's no limit on how much you can earn, and that's pretty amazing, right? In fact, it's even more amazing because of all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of all the places in the United States that take credit cards take the Discover credit card. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing the word yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Players Championship getting underway today. TPC Sawgrass. Golf Channel continuing coverage over the weekend on NBC. Got a poll question before we get to Chris Mannix.
Okay, so we're battling around what's a good three-point poll question. Paulie has this idea that what if you make it worth 2.5 points.
No.
Problem solved.
No.
Problem solved.
Analytics.
That's the beginning of the problems.
No. The 2.5 point shot would take over the NBA.
Oh.
It would devalue that shot enough, but it'd still make people shoot it.
Mm.
And then twos would be more in play, but not, it wouldn't be like a, you know, a street fight down for twos.
But you could win like 132.5 to 129.
This is fantastic for Vegas. Vegas would love this.
Oh, with the hook.
Yeah.
With the hook. Yes, Tom.
Then the over-under would have fractions like 1/4 and 3/8. They'd have to play with the fractions like crazy with half points.
Yeah, can you imagine Harden from 2.5?
Couldn't. Well, not in the playoffs.
No.
It wouldn't be.
That's cold.
Chris Mannix, he's a senior writer covering the NBA for Sports Illustrated, joining us on the program. NBA shut down a year ago on this day. What do you remember about that?
I remember being relieved for a minute because I had been scheduled to do back-to-back Celtics games for local TV there. I just finished writing a story. I was exhausted. And I remember thinking, like, great, you know, this will be like a week, a couple of days off. I can get back into the flow after kind of a mini vacation. Didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, when it first happened, and I remember Paulie texted me, he said, turn on ESPN, and I turned on ESPN, and it wasn't like 11 o'clock at night to watch SportsCenter. It was 8 o'clock, and you're going, wait a minute, what's going on ESPN? Oh, they got a basketball game. No, they're supposed to have a basketball game. And then all of a sudden, it was basically Oklahoma City, drive home safely. And then you realized, okay, what's this mean? And who would have thought, you know, that Sacramento later on, they had to tell that, you know, it's like, hey, there's contact tracing with these officials. And I mean, it's pretty incredible what happened, what happened quickly with the NBA. And then everybody else sort of followed suit.
Yeah, it was, when you look back on it now, it was remarkable. I remember, I think it was the Hawks game that turned out to be Vince Carter's last game of his career there. And I remember kind of wondering, like, you know, what are you guys doing? Why are you even finishing this game? I mean, like, you know, the whole referee thing you were talking about, you just wonder why everybody didn't just stop short right there and end it. But I think that goes to show that back then, nobody believed that this was going to have the kind of impact on the season that it had. I remember talking to coaches, executives in the days that followed. All of them had said, look, it's probably going to be about a week for this thing to settle down. Then we'll come back in empty arenas. There was an acceptance that they'd be back in limited to no capacity at arenas, but no comprehension that this could wind up shutting the league down until they could go into a bubble.
And remember, LeBron said that he's not playing if there's no fans in the stands.
Yeah. And that was, I was in LA for that. And somebody asked that. He was kind of walked into that a little bit. Okay. Where, yeah, he didn't know about all the things that were going on in that moment when the NBA said that. He's, you know, of course he responds, you know, I'm not playing without fans. I play for the fans. Well, that obviously changed very quickly as the reality of the situation kind of set in.
You know, you look back on the bubble and we didn't know it was going to work. And, you know, you had some players who were adversely affected by it, but I still maintain what LeBron and the Lakers pulled off is as memorable and as difficult as any team has gone through with no home court advantage there, a sterile environment. Have we given the Lakers enough credit for what they pulled off in winning that championship?
I think we have. I'm kind of a tough person to talk to about the challenges of the bubble, Dan, because sitting in a hotel room eating buffalo wings is not all that abnormal for my day-to-day life. So it's it really is. Like, I kind of say that. I mean, I you know, sympathize with people that have families and are away from them. That's just not me. And so if you, like, tell me that I can get wings 24 hours a day, like, and there's a never-ending supply of candy in the mess hall. Like, I don't really do all that. But you could see it. I mean, when you're in that bubble, and I was in it for 2+ months, you can see the mental wear and tear it takes on players in real time. From the first week where everybody's kind of like, all right, we can do this. We can hang by the pool. No big deal. To, like, the second month when you see these guys walking to the dining hall, just trudging, heads down, not a lot of conversation amongst each other, sitting down, getting through a meal, and then going back to their room. It obviously had an enormous mental toll taken on these guys. So I don't know where you rank it among the most difficult things the NBA team has done to win a championship, but it's up there to be able to go 3+ months and win a title.
Chris Mannix, the Sports Illustrated senior NBA writer, joining us. I saw an article, a column, and it had to do with ESPN speaking to several prominent figures around the NBA, and that there was a radical proposal that maybe you could limit the number of threes you attempt in a game. Let's say it was first half, you got to attempt 20, second half, 20, And then after that, everything counts as two until the final 6 minutes of the game. Are we getting to the point, is it too much of a good thing that what the three-pointer means to the NBA right now?
We're not getting to that point. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. And this is what the NBA wanted 20-plus years ago when the ratings were starting to dip, the physicality of the game was causing too many low-scoring games. You remember that time, Dan. You know, David Stern and NBA brass, I mean, they wanted what we're seeing right now, a free-flowing game, a lot of three-point shots. Maybe they didn't want it at the level that we're seeing where teams are just reflexively shooting 35, 40 three-pointers per game, sometimes more. But this is the trade-off. This is what you get. The idea that they're going to limit three-pointers in a game is just – it's as likely as them ultimately instituting the four-point shot, which was kind of a running joke, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. This you're going to have to deal with the fallout because this has helped grow the game. I mean, think about the most popular players in the game, the most emulated players in the game. It begins with Steph Curry, and it goes down to all these three-point shooters that have helped make the game as popular as it is today. It just is what it is, Dan. You're not going to be able to change what the NBA has become.
But is there a really good team who doesn't rely on the three-pointer as much as everybody else does?
I mean, there are teams that do it at a supersized level. I don't have the numbers in front of me on which team ranks towards the bottom, but every team is going to jack them up at a high level, especially in the fourth quarter. I mean, look, Dan, coaches in the NBA, every coach, this is what they teach. The best shots are layups, dunks, and three-pointers. The way that Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant played the game, every coach would try to dissuade them of that nowadays. They don't want mid-range jumpers. They don't want turnaround post shots because they have been deemed inefficient. Layups, free throws, threes. That is all every coach wants from their team. You know, you might see some numbers dip here or there from one team to another, but by and large, that's the philosophy.
Well, I got Utah's the number one three-point shooting team in the NBA. The Sixers are the lowest. The Lakers are in the bottom five as well. Now, I don't know if that changes when we get to the postseason or later in the season, but, you know, do you have to be jacking them up? And are you all in on Utah being a team to beat or, you know, one of the teams to beat?
I don't think you have to be jacking them up to be a championship team, especially when you're talking about the Lakers and Sixers, who are both, you know, at least can be elite defensive teams with the personnel that they have. So if you can be great on that end, you're fine. I am buying the Jazz as a serious threat to win a championship because I was going through this over the All-Star break. There's really nothing the Jazz do that you look at and say that's not sustainable. You've got Mitchell playing at a high level, which is a natural progression of his game. Mike Conley was not great last year, but this is the Mike Conley, Dan, that we've seen for most of his career. The guy that we saw playing so well in Memphis, Gobert, to me, is a sneaky MVP candidate. I mean, he has become such a presence offensively with his screen setting that he's a real impact player on that end of the floor without shooting the three. They've been an elite defensive team during Quinn Snyder's time there. Certainly, when you get into the playoffs, I want to see if Mitchell can make plays, if Conley can make plays, end of game situations. But right now, like, the only question you have is, can like Jordan Clarkson continue to be the sixth man of the year type of player, or does he revert to being an inconsistent gunner? Other than that, I'm pretty sold on what the Jazz are.
Yeah, but I can't give Rudy Gobert MVP credit if he sets nice screens, Chris.
Of course you can.
No, I can't.
Why?
Can you imagine that where you're going, what did he do so well? Man, can he?
Okay, now you're twisting words here. Like, it's not he's just this great screen setter. He's also the most intimidating defensive presence the league has seen since Mutombo. So, like, that's a big factor in all this. But offensively, you ask those Jazz players, and I've done this, like, you know, what's Gobert's influence? And he just sets some bone-crushing screens that freeze up these guys as an impact.
Okay,
He's never going to be a three-point shooter, Dan. That's obvious.
Yeah.
But if he can be a massive screen setter, that'll impact the offense.
The Lakers can't win a title without AD. Can the Nets win a title without KD?
No, neither. I don't think the Lakers, frankly, can win a title without Dennis Schroeder, for that matter. But that's a conversation for another time. And he's been that impactful for them. Look, the Nets are going to test the theory if that you need to be a top 10-ish defensive team to win a championship. They're not going to be that type of team, no matter how many guys they sign off the street in the next couple of weeks. But because they're so dynamic offensively at full strength, because they've got three guys, which is almost unprecedented, three guys that can take over a game in the fourth quarter, they can get away with being a middle of the pack or worse defensive team. But without Durant, without him being completely healthy, there's too many good teams in the Eastern Conference, I think, that can knock them off.
Great to talk to you again, Chris. I hope you're well.
I thought you'd appreciate screen set. Like, you know, kind of a grinder in your day.
I know, but it's nice. I mean, I didn't set screens. I was a shooter. So.
Right. But you went around them, right? So you knew the value of a screen.
Yeah, but, you know, it wasn't, you know, one of those things where I said, gosh, you know, that guy, he's more valuable than I am. It didn't matter if they were setting screens or not for me. I mean, couldn't guard
me. Okay. Next time you have Reggie Miller on, ask him that question.
He didn't need screens. He just ran all day.
Well, you don't just run without getting a screen set for you. That's crazy. The reason you're running is you're kind of trying to rub guys off screens. And Reggie had, by the way, two of the better ones in the Davis twins, Antonio and Dale, who just set rocking screens
there. They weren't twins.
I know. They were called that, though. Like, that's. I know they weren't twins. I just think you hate the French.
I don't hate the French. I love Tony Parker.
Just him?
Yes. Rudy and the Goberts. I love Rudy. God, I'm going to tune into the next Jazz game just to watch him set screens. God, it's.
I'm telling you, must see TV.
I know. Thank you, Chris.
You got it, Dan.
Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated senior basketball writer, and a man who loves a good screen. Take a break. Play of the day next here on The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, my God.
The play. The play's called play. Of the day.
Runner left side, got it!
Check this out.
Morant drives baseline, loses the handle, goes right to Valanciunas, who floats it up and in and gets fouled again. Jonas Valanciunas single-handedly trying to take this one over. He's got 24 and 14.
Ended up with 29 and 20, courtesy of the Grizzlies Radio Network. Play of the day brought to you by M-Drive, powerful ingredients backed by science. Help me get energized, stronger, leaner. The supplement I take every day, mdrivedan.com. Don't let age beat you. Refind your prime with M-Drive. We've been wondering about fate and luck and how that could have changed sports history when you think about it. You know, if Drew Bledsoe does not get hit in that game against the Jets, when does Tom Brady get his chance? What if the Saints had drafted Patrick Mahomes and he had to sit behind Drew Brees for a couple of years? All these what ifs. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers held the number one overall pick. I believe this is 1986 or 87. Paulie can help me out on that. They decided to take Bo Jackson. Okay. Well, there was a slight problem. He told the Buccaneers, don't draft me. He refused to play for Tampa because he visited the team facilities, and that was in the spring. They said it was approved by the NCAA, and it wasn't. So he was not allowed to play his final college baseball season at Auburn. He believed that Tampa owner Hugh Culverhouse had done this on purpose so they could convince Bo to just play football for the Buccaneers. He obviously never played for the Buccaneers, selected by the Kansas City Royals in the first round of the baseball draft, and then he was selected, then his rights were traded to the Raiders, I believe, after that.
I think in 87 draft, the Raiders took him late in the draft and worked out some type of deal where they took over his rights from Tampa.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Falcons had the second pick of that draft. Imagine if the Atlanta Falcons, a Southern team, acquired Bo Jackson in 1986. That, I mean, he was a household name.
Yeah.
At 19.
And he, you know, playing both sports there, and he was great at both, but he would have been a Hall of Famer in either one, I think, had he decided to just concentrate on that sport. But, you know, Bo knows sports. One of the great ad campaigns in history. McLevin, what's the poll question today?
Well, we started out with, are there too many three-pointers in the NBA? And 64% said yes.
Okay.
So that means we have to address this. We have to figure it out.
I don't know if we do. I don't know what the ratings are or what attendance will be once we're allowed to have fans that come back. Is it bad basketball? Is it entertaining basketball? You know, scoring is up. We love scoring. This is what the NBA, this is what every league is trying to do. Have more scoring, more offense. It's like the home run. Is the three-pointer like the home run in baseball? That you have guys with launch angle, they go up there, this is all they're trying to do. In the NBA, you've got guys, they want to shoot, everybody wants to shoot the three. What are you tired of more, home runs or three-pointers? Because home runs go up every year. They break the single season record every year now. Three-pointers every year break the record. Yeah, McLovin.
Passing yards and touchdowns, too.
Yeah.
Same in NFL.
It feels like we're okay with that. It still feels like that's difficult to do. And you don't have ordinary people doing extraordinary things. It's the elite, you know, are able to do this. Whereas in baseball, you go, wait, that guy's got how many home runs? Or that guy is a great three-point shooter? It feels like it's a little more random when it comes to baseball and even shooting three-pointers than it is, you know, that guy has 19 touchdown receptions or that guy's thrown for 42 touchdowns. All right, we'll get to phone calls coming up next hour. We will check in with Doug Gottlieb. Is there a chance that Duke is going to get into the tournament with a win against Florida State? Feels like that. Feels like that. But if you're Kentucky, would you go to the NIT? Like, these are pressing questions that I have. Yes, McLovin, what?
I was going to ask a poll question. Do you want Duke to be in the tournament?
Yeah.
But you know, some people hate Duke. I'm kind of a bit of a historical Duke hater.
Yeah. I mean, if you hate them, you want them in so you see them lose. Make him a 16 seed. That's what I think would be really spicy. Also, we'll hear from Jerry Jones coming up next hour. Jerry did not disappoint. Because I thought, hey, if you did such a great job with Dak, you got to be taking a victory lap. He's not taking a victory lap. Or at least a victory lap that you thought he would be taking. But we'll hear from Dak Prescott and Jerry Jones after that contract was signed. Anything else that I need to mention here?
A lot of people like your shirt. It's kind of a spring flannel.
Yeah?
Yeah, getting a good reaction. Like a bluish spring flannel, bright.
I like to call it a sprannel.
Mm-hmm.
Spring and flannel.
There you go.
Yeah. Or it could be a fling. It could be a flannel and spring. Whoa. 1 hour in the books, two more to go on this Thursday. And in case you're wondering, scoring at home, it's Fritzy, McLovin, Paulie, Seton, and yours truly here on the Dan Patrick Show. Close out first hour with ZipRecruiter. I often give a stat of the day. In fact, I gave one earlier in the hour. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. How about that for a stat of the day? Let me tell you about ZipRecruiter. If you're looking to hire somebody, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidate for your team fast. From healthcare to manufacturing to business services. And now, try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Patrick. You post a job on ZipRecruiter. It gets sent out to over 100 top job sites with one click. ZipRecruiter's matching technology scans thousands of resumes and profiles to send you the most qualified people for your job. If you're really interested in a candidate, you can invite them to apply for your job. One click, ZipRecruiter sends them an email from you, and you'll stand out from the competition. Try it for free. My listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/Patrick, ZipRecruiter.com/Patrick, and remember, ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire.